I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, books on boats, from nautical novels to maritime adventures for kids and everything in between. With us today, Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Mindy.
And Vicki Titcomb from Titcomb's Books. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right, so this was like pretty easy assignment, right? Books on boats.
You know, that's what we were hoping. We were hoping this is going to, it's July, we're busy, this is going to be a piece of cake. And we were very wrong. We were very wrong. Were we not, Vicki?
We both found that, didn't we? We thought, and there's just so much out there on boats. And the hard thing was what not to choose.
That's right. And a lot of great boat riding.
Yes. But we
could have done this whole show on wooden boats. We could have done the whole show on canoes. I mean, there is just so much. Mm. So the real challenge of this show has been culling, as just trying to get rid of the piles and piles. You know, I started with, I think, 50 books.
Oh,
and,
my
goodness. Know, eventually we're down to just a handful.
But I think what's great is I love that you don't always bring the expected, which is great. So what are you going to start with, Jill?
Well, of course, I'm going to start with the most obvious boating book one could hope for, Stuart Little.
Oh.
Yes,
by E.B. White. And for those
did
of you
do that because he's my favorite.
I do know you're very fond of it. As am I. There was sort of no way not to start with Stuart Little for me. And I think part of whenever we do this show, part of it is sort of thinking about when did I first, see a book on whatever. And as it happens, Stuart Little was a very early boat book for me. And Stuart Little, for the two of you that don't know who Stuart Little is, is a children's book. And the first chapter is called In the Drain. And just to give you a sense of what this is about, should you never have had the pleasure of reading Stuart Little, and we hope that you will after you hear a little bit of this. When Mrs. Frederick C. Little's second son arrived, everybody noticed that he was not much bigger than a mouse. The truth of the matter was, the baby looked very much like a mouse in every way. He was only about 2 inches high, and he had a mouse's sharp nose, a mouse's tail, a mouse's whiskers, and the pleasant, shy manner of a mouse. So you're starting a novel for children with a child who is born who looks exactly like a mouse. In fact, one might say is a mouse. But one of the great things about this is it's written, every chapter is sort of separate, so you can really, it's a nice little chapter book if you want to read it aloud with kids. And there is a great section, two chapters, in fact, about sailing. And sailing in New York City, in Central Park, and it talks about the pond in Central Park. Here's a little bit of this. Over the pond, the west wind blew, and into the teeth of the west wind sailed the sloops and schooners, their rails well down, their wet decks gleaming. The owners, boys and grown men, raced around the cement shores, hoping to arrive at the other side in time to keep the boats from bumping. Some of the toy boats were not as small as you might think, for when you got close to them, you found that their mainmast was taller than a man's head, and they were beautifully made, with everything shipshape and ready for sea. To Stuart, they seemed enormous, and he hoped he would be able to get aboard one of them and sail away to the far corners of the pond. He was an adventurous little fellow and loved the feel of the breeze in his face and the cry of the gulls overhead and the heave of the great swell under him. And Stuart from there goes and actually becomes a skipper of one of these small boats because somebody's very annoyed that he never gets to, his boat never wins because he doesn't have a captain on the boat. So Stuart is just the right size in order to sail the boat. And in the second chapter called The Sailboat Race, it begins when the people in Central Park learn that one of the toy sailboats was being steered by a mouse in a sailor suit. They all came running. Soon the shores of the pond were so crowded that a policeman was sent from headquarters to announce that everybody would have to stop pushing. But nobody did. People in New York like to push each other. So E.B. White is always very funny, and he was a great sailor himself. Yes. And so these two chapters in Stuart Little, and there actually is another chapter in Stuart Little in which he gets into a little canoe that is actually a gift canoe, one of those mm-hmm. gift canoes you might buy in a little store in Maine, for example.
Right.
So Stuart Little, very sweet sailing book.
Okay.
Oh. Vicki?
Well, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I should say, first of all, my husband is boat crazy. And so when I started thinking about this program, I looked through our bookshelves and I saw this book called Wooden Boats by Michael Ruhlman. Michael decided to just really look at the craftsmanship of wooden boats and how they're made and the people who make them. So he went up to Maine, which is the heart of wooden boat world. And so he thought, but he was talking with John Wilson, who is the founder of Wooden Boat Magazine. And John said, no, don't stay here in Maine. He said, go to Martha's Vineyard, right here off Cape Cod. And he said, this is from the book, Nat and Ross, Wilson replied, are doing in Vineyard Haven what everyone thinks is happening in Maine but isn't. Nat Benjamin, he went on, is one of the best designers and purest builders in the country, an artist, articulate and vocal about the importance of traditional wooden boats, plank-on-frame boats. And he goes on to write a little explanation about being boat crazy that I just love and have to read. He says, some people become boat smart. Others are simply struck. Something happens to certain men when they see a boat and they become crazy. A man or the occasional woman seem to be less frequently disturbed, who is boat struck, shows no easily discernible outward signs of the illness. On the contrary, the boat struck looks more than reasonable. They're successful people. They're not easily carried away. They have accumulated, if not substantial wealth, then at least a significant disposable income. They're smart, cool, self-possessed, and they're pretty good on the water. But a man who is boat struck often has an unrealistic understanding of his cash situation. And cash is the fulcrum on which a boat struck life teeters between bliss and ruin. Boats require plenty of cash.
Well, that's so, for sure. All right, so the title again is?
This is Wooden Boats in Pursuit of the Perfect Craft at an American Boatyard by Michael Ruhlman. And it's just beautifully written. In fact, he and his wife, Ann Hood, will be coming to here to the Cape to visit the bookshop in September.
I didn't realize Ann was his wife.
Oh, this is a new marriage. And they were featured. Elizabeth Merritt at our bookshop found them as the wedding of the week in the New York Times.
Oh,
and it's
funny?
A fabulous story. So he's a wonderful writer.
Wow.
So
well, she's a wonderful writer. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I highly recommend the book.
If you have a book you'd like to recommend, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And before we go to you, Jill, I'm going to make a suggestion, a kid's book, How I Became a Pirate. It's by Melinda Long, and it's when Braidbeard's pirate crew invites Jeremy Jacob to join their voyage, he jumps right on board thinking that the pirate life will be great. But when he finds out that pirates don't get bedtime stories or tucking in at night, never mind that goodnight kiss, he reconsiders his decision. It's a really cute book with a wonderful story and you know, a lesson that pirate's life isn't for everybody. He's got to get home to play soccer. Okay. Jill.
Speaking of vineyard and boat building, a really beautiful book was published some years ago now called Schooner, Building a Wooden Boat on Martha's Vineyard, with spectacular photos. I have to say, one of the most striking things about this book is the photos that were taken by Allison Shaw. Tom Dunlop wrote the text, and it begins happily with a Kenneth Graham Wind in the Willows quote, the classic, believe me, my young friend, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, half so much worth doing as simply messing about in boats. And this is, in fact, shows you step to step how they built this boat on the vineyard. And it is published by Vineyard Stories, an Edgartown publisher, which I assume they are still doing wonderful books, although I haven't heard of one lately. But this one is spectacular. And it goes through every single step of how they built the boat and how they got it actually into the water. Even that became a great challenge, considering how busy it can be on the vineyard in the summer. And they also have great little quotes in it as well. Someone once asked the great literary wit Samuel Johnson what one book he would take with him if he were cast away on a distant island. His instant reply was, Harrison's Elements of Boat Building, because, of course, if you're on an island, one. It also has a terrific glossary. So for those of you that don't know any boat terminology, this has it all, mainsail and marlin line. I'm sure your husband knows what all of these things are, Vicki.
Actually, but... yes. In fact, we were at the opening or the party for this book at Nat and Ross's shop in Vineyard Haven.
That must have been so...
It was
everybody
fun.
Must have been so incredibly excited about the entire... event.
And the book is beautiful.
It is beautiful. It really is. Yeah.
It is. And it is also just, it's not just a coffee table book. It is, while it is a very beautiful book, it has a lot of great information on building that boat. It is called Schooner Building a Wooden Boat on Martha's Vineyard.
All right. Vicki.
Oh, what to do next? I think we're going to take little trips around the world, I think.
Okay.
I brought a couple of books. One is called Lazarus World Voyage, A Hurricane Wreck Circumnavigates the Globe by Tim Sperry. And it's a fabulous story of four young men, they were in their early 20s, who decide that they want to travel around the world in a boat. Kind of on a lark. They don't have any money, so they find a boat that has been damaged in Hurricane Bob. Fix it up. They bought it for $4,500, spent a lot of time fixing it up, and off they go for 2.5 years. And Tim writes a wonderful account of their experiences. All sorts of things that you would expect five boys on a boat to have. Leaks and things go wrong and all sorts of things. They're in Tahiti. They're all over the world. And it's a great, great read. I highly recommend it. Another one that... Wendy Hinman did a book called Tightwads on the Loose, a 7-year Pacific odyssey.
Wow.
If you can imagine, she and her husband went on a 31-foot boat around the world for seven years.
Wow. Years.
The boat was so small that her husband couldn't stand in it. And they had a marvelous time. And she recounts their adventures. It's absolutely fascinating.
And that one's called?
This is called Tightwads on the Loose, A 7-Year Pacific Odyssey.
We're talking about books on boats, 866-999-4626. If you'd like to add something to our list, our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after this break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books on boats with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Vicki Titcomb from Titcomb's Books. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to suggest something for our reading list, which we will have a link to later this afternoon. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jill, what have you got next?
Well, this is a really interesting story that I had obviously heard of at some point, but had forgotten and have reacquainted myself. It is a book called A Memoir, and Vicki's travel stories about crossing the ocean this is right up that alley. It's called Tinkerbell by Robert Manry. And I don't know how many of our listeners might remember this story, because this was a story that actually began in Falmouth and was covered by the New York Times. This fellow decided he was going to ride his little boat, which was, according to the New York Times, let's see, it was a $250 vessel.
Oh my goodness.
That he was going to sail in from Falmouth, Massachusetts to Falmouth, England. And this book is the story of his actually succeeding in doing this by himself. This was, the Times was covering this in August of 1965 is when he finally made it to Falmouth, England. But he writes a little bit about his last night, and he didn't want to tell. There weren't many people that knew he was going to do this. Mm-hmm. He was a reporter, and he wanted to sort of do this on his vacation, essentially, is what he was doing. So he talks in the book about how the last night before he's getting onto his boat, the night of Monday, May 31st, my last night ashore for some time, I had supper at a little restaurant on the city's main street. and while I was eating, reviewed the circumstances that had led me to select Falmouth as my port of departure. Actually, the first thing I'd done was to choose the port I wanted to arrive at in England, and in the beginning, I thought the best one would be Penzance, for it was near a tip of England that stretched out toward the United States like a hand offered to a friend. But the sailing directions mentioned various difficulties and dangers connecting with entering Penzance or Newlyn, the adjacent harbor, where the Crappos had landed, so I decided to go on to Falmouth. And so he decides to go on to Falmouth, and then he starts looking for where is he going to start, because he didn't know at that time where he was going to start. And he decides that on studying the map, I decided that some harbor on the southern shore of Cape Cod would do very nicely as a starting point. And then I discovered a Falmouth there, too. So that settled it. I'd sail from Falmouth, USA, a former shipbuilding center and whaling port, to Falmouth, England, a famous maritime town and resort. And by the time he got to Falmouth, England, there were huge crowds waiting for him there because the newspaper had finally noticed what he was doing. The New York Times picked up the story, and there are photos in this book. You can see his boat, Tinkerbell, next to the Island Queen.
How big is the boat? Great, does it say how big
it
the boat is?
I'm sure somewhere it does say how big the boat. It was not very big. His tiny sailboat is
tiny.
What it says
wow.
in this article.
If the name was Tinkerbell, it couldn't be
great.
Too big.
Right. And it was a 3,200-mile solo voyage across
wow.
the Atlantic. And what's funny is his wife is also keeping her own little journal of what's happening. So in the back of the book, you have her whole journal of what's happening. And there, you know, Thursday, July 15th, the editor of the Falmouth Enterprise tells me Falmouth Cornwall is planning a royal reception for Robert. So the Enterprise was obviously communicating with his wife on land and also presumably reading all those New York Times articles. A really fascinating little piece of sea history. There's a beautiful map on the end pages that shows you everywhere he went and things that happen. School of Dolphin passes, meet freighter, second rudder breaks.
He made that.
It is truly amazing. And he has made this map has circle numbers, which are key events to his voyage.
And he didn't have a boat following him.
No. He was on his own.
That's amazing.
And he indeed made it. Fortunately, and he did not last much longer after he made this. Well, let's see. He did this in 65. By 71, he had died. And obit was in the New York Times. Robert Neil Manry, the newspaper copy editor, who sailed the Atlantic alone in the summer of 65 in the smallest boat ever to make the voyage nonstop, died here tonight. He was 52 years old.
Wow.
So it's a good thing he did it when he did.
Yeah,
and the book is called Tinkerbell.
I love it.
By Robert Manry.
866-999-4626 is our number if you have a suggestion for our list of books on boats. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Henry is giving us a call from East Ham. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, Mindy. A book that I've read a couple of times is called Sailing Around the World Alone. And this was accomplished by Joshua Slocum in 1909, and he wrote a book about it. Ooh. And I just think it's a great book. His boat, The Spray, there's a recreation of it at the museum at New Bedford, I think the Whaling Museum. It's just a great book. And the last time I read it, I found that somebody had made a computer program, a computer presentation to go along with it. So as Joshua's visiting the Canary Islands or wherever he's visiting all around the world, this person has photographs showing what it looks like today.
Wow. So it's Sailing Around the World Alone by Joshua. What was his last name?
Slocum.
Yeah, an absolute classic sailing book.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Great. Henry, thanks for that suggestion. What a great idea for somebody to do the photos. Thanks for noticing that. Thanks, Henry, for that call. 866-999-4626 if you'd like to add to our list. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And, of course, we will have a link to the list of all the books we talk about later this afternoon at our website, capeandislands.org. Vicki, you are up next.
Well, I was just thinking, and we've been talking about books about sailing alone or going around the world. Sailors, if they're not sailing, they love to read about sailing. But I have to say, even us landlubbers, mm-hmm. we like to know what it was like to experience. What would we do? How would it feel? And there's so many of these great stories, and the Joshua Slocum is a great example of a classic story.
I would rather read about it myself. I can't see land.
I'm so glad.
Nervous.
Yeah, my husband likes to sail, and I sail with him, and I enjoy it. But I love that he likes to see land too.
Me too. I
can't imagine.
Although I have to say, having done a transatlantic crossing once on a big boat, it was so beautiful. I mean, the ocean just being in the middle of the, well, we had good weather, you know, that helps a lot.
That, I'd probably die of a heart attack if I was in a storm in the middle of the ocean.
Well, I brought an example of one author's books, Edward Rowe Snow. We have a lot of used and rare books, and he is the author people love more than almost any other nautical author or maritime author. This is Mysterious Tales of the New England Coast. He has written about ghosts. He's written about pirates. He's written about women at sea. He was just a supreme storyteller.
He was the go-to guy for such a long time.
He was it. And he was he got to know many of the people who lived on lighthouses. He loved lighthouses and islands. And he was also known as the Flying Santa. Mm. There was a children's book about him.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he would take a small plane, and he would fly from lighthouse to lighthouse, dropping presents dressed in a Santa outfit to the children living on lighthouses. So we couldn't talk about nautical books without a nod to Edward Rowe Snow.
All right. Allie is giving us a call from Bourne. Good morning, Allie.
Good morning. I love this topic. I love listening to you guys. I love books. I love boats. Favorite, all-time favorite books is Endurance and the story of Ernest Shackleton. And if you read the book, how he chooses his crew and the careful thought that he puts in, it's like he knew what was going on. And it's just a wonderful, amazing book about a boat. And I recommend it to everybody, among a ton of other books. But
yeah. I was going to say, that's the kind of captain you want, somebody who can ease the crew.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. What a great suggestion.
Yeah. Thanks, Allie, for that.
You know, we were in England a couple of years ago, and I had been corresponding with a book collector on boats, and he mentioned that where he taught, they had the boat that the crew on the Endurance left on a small boat and crossed these rough seas in, and we went to see it. And it was a small boat covered with a tent sail. And it was I've forgotten the name of the boat now, but incredible story of the Endurance and how they survived.
866-999-4626 is our number, or you can jot us a little note via email for your suggestion, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jill?
Well, I brought a novel that I am sorry to report is not, this is my disclaimer on this book to start with, is that unbelievably, there is not a copy in the Clams Network, which when you hear who wrote this book, you will be as surprised as I am. This is a novel, although I can sort of explain why there's not a copy of this. This book is called The Green Ray by Jules Verne. It is a novel about a voyage. It is also a novel about romance and love and a young girl who is living with her two uncles, and they are trying to marry her off. That is sort of the premise of the book. But it is more importantly about this trip that they take across they're going from in Glasgow, and they go around Mull, the Isle of Mull. And so it is a beautiful story about this trip. And the route of the trip is both by river and by sea. The traveler goes down the Clyde as far as the Firth, to which it gives its name, navigates between the islands and isles that make this capricious archipelago look like the hand of an enormous skeleton spread over that part of the ocean, and then travels back up along the right side of the hand to the port of Oban.
Let's get Matthew in Forestdale. Matthew, good morning. Are you there, Matthew? Hi. Hi, Matthew. What's your book?
That's a book suggestion.
Okay.
I've read it a few times. It's my favorite from the series. It's called Fight Against the Falls by Tyler Benson. It's called Onyx and the Fight Against the Falls.
Do you guys know that book? What was the name of it again, Matthew?
Onyx and the Fight Against the Fall.
Okay. Matthew, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate that. We'll add that to the list. 866-999-4626 or our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books on boats. 866-999-4626 for your suggestions. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Before the break, we were kind of up against the clock. Matthew called in from Forestdale to make a suggestion that I just want to elaborate a little bit more on. He talked about The Adventures of Onyx by Tyler Benson. And this is an educational book series about the Coast Guard. And Matthew's favorite in the series is The Fight Against the Falls. And the review for that says, in this nonstop adventure, Onyx and his fellow Coasties work with the Buffalo Police to save a sinking yacht. Then the Coast Guard must enter the dangerous exclusionary zone of Niagara Falls to rescue a family trapped and on a disabled drifting boat. So, Matthew, thanks for that suggestion. Sounds like a good read.
It does. And I was just telling you a little bit about The Green Ray by Jules Verne. And what I want to emphasize here is while there is a boat story here, there's also a love story. And part of what catches the attention of their niece, the uncle's niece who is traveling with them, Miss Campbell, is the Green Ray, which is, as she says, as she tells them, was related to an old legend whose innermost meaning she had not understood until then. It was one of the numerous inexplicable legends born in the Highlands and affirms the following. This ray has the virtue of meaning that anyone who has seen it can no longer make a mistake in matters of sentiment. Its appearance destroys illusions and lies.
Mm.
So it is a seafaring story, and she, though, is on the hunt for the Green Ray. And there actually was a film made of this novel by Eric Rohmer called Le Rayon Vert, but it was called Summer in the United States instead of The Green Ray. So The Green Ray by Jules Verne, his unloved novel, because it isn't all about inventions and the future, but it is certainly about the heart and about boats.
All right, let's talk to Cliff, who's giving us a call from Sandwich. Hi, Cliff.
Hi, actually, it's Chris.
Oh, Chris. Okay, sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
Yep, that's okay. I've been called worse. I just wanted to mention, my godfather was a man named William Albert Robinson, and he sailed around the world, you know, first with his wife and then later alone in the 20s and 30s, and wrote several interesting books. One was called 20,000 Leagues Over the Sea, and another was called Voyage to Galapagos. But he lived a fantasy life. He ate human flesh with cannibals. He was shipwrecked and was ready to ground. And he ultimately settled in Tahiti, where he married a Tahitian princess and had three daughters.
Wow. Chris, what was his name again? What's his name again?
William Albert Robinson.
William Albert Robinson. Okay. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for the call. We'll have to check that out.
Yes, it's great reading. It inspired me to take up sailing.
Oh, okay. All right. Chris, thanks for the call. We have Tim calling from South Yarmouth. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. I wondered if we'd already discussed the novels of Patrick O'Brien.
Oh, we have not, but thank you for mentioning them. Are you a big fan of his?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's a sequential series of like 18 novels all about 17th century Royal Navy, circumnavigating the globe. A lot of cultural and medical scientific information in these novels. It's really a must-read for anyone interested in the sea or in sailing, naval sailing.
Or in great historical fiction. I remember the New York Times once wrote an article about his books, and they were like, this is the best historical fiction ever.
Mm-hmm. Great suggestion.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the writing is engrossing. I mean, you just can't stop reading it, as well as all the factual information contained therein.
All right.
So I recommend those to anybody who wants to read about the sea and boats.
All right, Tim, thanks for that. We love books we can't put down. Thanks for the call. Vicki, what's your next book?
Probably the people who are most passionate about boats are Herreshoff boat lovers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I have this beautiful new book that came out, written by Maynard Bray, Klaus van der Linde from Switzerland, who is one of the two leading maritime historians, Klaus particularly on the Herreshoff boats, and with photos by Benjamin Mendlowitz. It is absolutely gorgeous. It's a coffee table-sized book with incredible content about the various Herreshoff boats. Herreshoff created some of the most beautiful and fastest racing sailboats in the world. And this is the first book to include some of the plans from the Hart Collection, Nautical Collection, up at MIT. One of the Herreshoffs was a graduate of MIT, and the collection went there. Mm-hmm. The boats were made in Bristol, Rhode Island, and there is a Herreshoff Museum there as well.
Very popular
highly recommended.
Boats. Yeah, I was going to say expensive boats too.
Some are. We have a 15-foot. It's a small boat, as I was saying earlier. it's just beautiful. It handles like it just turns on a dime. It handles beautifully. This one was built in 1905.
Wow!
And my husband has kept it restored and works on it.
Yeah. A labor of love. For
labor
sure.
of love,
right?
All right? Absolutely.
Let's talk to Andrew, who's giving us a call from Sandwich. Good morning, Andrew.
How are you doing? I kind of came in late, but I don't think we've discussed this book yet. Captain Courageous.
Captain Courageous.
Great suggestion.
Great novel. Great for kids. Something you can read with your kids. It's a story about a wealthy young man who falls overboard and is rescued by a Gloucester fisherman and, becomes a man in the process. So I'd like to recommend that to some of your readers out there.
Great. That's a great... We're getting some great recommendations this morning. Andrew, thanks for that. And we will add them to the list. Again, we will have that list, a link to the list, up on our website a little bit later today. Jill, what have you got?
I think we can't talk about books about boats without talking about this classic called Three Men in a Boat, To Say Nothing of the Dog by Jerome K. Jerome. It is a very funny book. I don't think I've ever read a book that is as silly and funny as this. And it begins, there were four of us. George and William Samuel Harris and myself and Montmorency. We were sitting in my room smoking and talking about how bad we were, bad from a medical point of view, I mean, of course. We were all feeling seedy and we were getting quite nervous about it. Harris said he felt such extraordinary fits of giddiness come over him at times that he hardly knew what he was doing. And then George said that he had fits of giddiness too and hardly knew what he was doing. And so they decide that the best solution for this is to take a boat trip. And Montmorency, by the way, is the dog, and the dog sort of steals the novel. And it's not so much a novel as it is a series of these funny stories about them boating. And the narrator immediately objects to the whole idea of a sea trip because he says a sea trip does you good when you are going to have a couple of months of it. But for a week, it is wicked. You start on Monday with the idea implanted in your bosom that you're going to enjoy yourself. You wave an area dude to the boys on shore, light your biggest pipe and swagger about the deck as if you were Captain Cook, Sir Francis Drake, and Christopher Columbus all rolled into one. On Tuesday, you wish you hadn't come. So it is very silly and a very fun and a sort of classic book at this point called Three Men in a Boat to Say Nothing of the Dog by Jerome K. Jerome.
Vicky.
Well, and that leads right to a book that I was going to recommend, and I love Three Men in a Boat, and this one is The Boat Who Wouldn't Float by Farley Mowat.
Another classic.
Oh my gosh, another classic, funny as can be. A man, it's a true story. Farley Mowat buys a boat up in Newfoundland with a friend of his. And he buys it in basically a drunken stupor, barely sees it. It's a wreck and really doesn't float, sinks a number of times. It's hilarious, laugh out loud, funny.
So he had a different view of that boat, obviously, when he had under the influence. He thought it was a better boat than it was?
Well, yes, but he did. It's funny, when he first sees it, he recognizes even that the color is the color of a green, similar to a German soldier in a that had died in a foxhole with him in World War II. The whole thing was just hilarious.
Jill.
I have to just mention, in passing, Hemingway's boat, Everything He Loved in Life and Lost, 1934 to 1961. It's by Paul Hendrickson. It was made a huge hit when this book came out, and a lot of it is about his boat and how his boat interacted with the rest of his life. But I have to tell you, the thing that most astonished me looking at it this time is there is a link to Cape Cod and Hemingway, which I never knew existed before I started looking at this book. It says, and this is not, may I say, even in the index. I don't know why. And if anyone out there knows this story, when he was 11, his mother had taken him on a nearly month-long trip by rail and steamer to Cape Cod and Nantucket Island, where he experienced the ocean for the first time and where he fished for sea bass and mackerel.
I never knew that.
I had no idea Hemingway had ever. And we were his biggest influence, apparently.
All roads lead to Cape Cod.
Apparently so. Anyway, it is a spectacular book about his boat and his life, especially the first two-thirds are more about the boat, and then it gets sort of into the last section is more about one of his sons. But great book about a guy who loved to fish, loved deep-sea fishing, and loved his boat.
Right. And could write pretty well.
Yeah, that too.
Oh, I'm going to give a nod to a few books that just I couldn't pass by. One of my favorite novels is Spartina by John Casey. It won the National Book Award. It's just one of those wonderful stories about a man, a blue-collar worker in Rhode Island, who is building a large boat in his backyard. He hopes it will help save his family and he'll earn money using it. But I love the picture of the inner life of this man and his foibles, his struggles. It's very real. It's very moving and just a great read. And I also, I couldn't come to this discussion without a couple of books that I think people will know quite well. One is In the Heart of the Sea, The Tragedy of the Whale Ship Essex by Nathaniel Philbrick. We can't talk about books about the sea without mentioning that. He's such a brilliant writer. He knows the sea intimately, and you feel everything that these sailors experienced lost at sea. And the other one is The Boys in the Boat, Nine Americans and Their Epic Quest for Gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics by Daniel James Brown. Many of our listeners, I'm sure, have read it. But if you haven't, I so encourage you to pick it up. It's an incredible story of boys. And you wonder, what was it that made them excel? They came from nothing. They were out at the University of Washington and beat the world in rowing. A great gift for a graduation present for at high school or college age, as well as a good read for anyone.
You have about 30 seconds, Jill.
I just want, you know, if you don't care for boats at all, but you care for food, take a look at this book called Food at Sea by Simon Spaulding, Shipboard Cuisine from Ancient to Modern Times. It is a really sort of a reference book. It is not what you call a great read. What it is a very interesting read, and it covers from the beginning of time, the ancient and medieval worlds, up through new technology, submarines, cruise ships. It has really interesting bits from Dickens. It has a chart of what the Civil War ration chart was, which was mostly pork and beans, pork and beans, pork and beans. So Food at Sea by Simon Spaulding.
And just got to throw this in here. Dan's recommends Horatio Hornblower novels by C.S. Forrester. The character of Captain Kirk was based on Hornblower.
Really?
See, something we didn't
know. Only Dan would know this.
Dan is the Star Trek trivia king. I'll tell you that right now. All right, Books on Boats today. We'll have that link up on our website to the list a little later this afternoon at capeandislands.org. Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Vicki Tickham from Tickham's Books. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mindy.
See you next month. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.